The following content is a PodCloud Network production.
Hey-o! What's going on, listeners? Today is Monday, September 18th, 2017, and I would like to welcome you to this week's Lloyd A. Thompson and the Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. I hope the listeners had an excellent week, as this show airs live every Monday, guys, from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, SoundCloud, and of course at LloydAThompson.com. And if you missed the live airing of this show, you can always catch a replay at those locations. Be sure to hit that subscribe button so you don't miss a damn thing. As always, guys, we try to air your questions on the show. So if you have questions, please shoot them through email to Lloyd@partmyfresh.com. You can follow us on Twitter at Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, and shoot us questions there. Or you can follow us on Instagram at Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, and shoot us questions there. As always, guys, we have a very exciting show for you today. We have the New York Jets in action against the Oakland Raiders. We have the Yankees handling their business against the Baltimore Orioles. ESPN came out with a player rankings, and they have Carmelo Anthony ranked as the 64th best player in the NBA. SMH to that. That's all I got to say about that. Also, we had a fight outside of the McGregor and Mayweather fight, Triple G versus Canelo Alvarez. We got a good show for you today, guys. So as always, let's buckle up, sit back and relax, and start spreading the news. Hey, yo, let's get it.
Ladies and gentlemen, like we always do at this time, it's Monday. That means it's time to talk sports on the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Show. Let's go.
As always, we got to find out where the double M is calling from. Yo, Mad Mike, where you calling from, brother?
Hey, man, I'm in the city today. I'm over here trying to get some information on Jerry Jones holding up, you know, Roger Goodell's contract extension. But I'm having no luck. You know, the NFL doesn't try to give any info out to us.
Wait, you said Jerry Jones holding up Roger Goodell's contract?
Apparently, he's one of the owners, or he's leading a group of owners in opposition of giving Goodell a new contract. But nobody will confirm that for me, so I can't speak to it.
Well, the funny thing about that is, you know, Roger Goodell has been awfully hard on Dallas Cowboy players in the past and currently with the Ezekiel Elliott situation. So I can see Jerry Jones doing that.
Yep.
So let's start off with your team, your beloved New York Jets, who faced the Oakland Raiders out in Oakland, and they took an L 45-20. But get this, Mike, I'm going to bring up a point that I feel that as bad as Josh McCown is, something that he actually does better than Eli Manning. But we'll get to that. But let's get to this Jets-Oakland Raiders game in which the Jets took an L 45-20.
Yeah, the loss doesn't surprise me. The nature of the loss doesn't surprise me either. Like I said, I expected it to be a blowout. Oakland's pretty solid offensively. But this was a really close game.
It was. I'll say that Oakland is a good team. And I actually thought that the Jets did a much better job of moving the ball this week. They finished with 271 yards, Matt Mike, and actually took some shots down the field for the first time. This is what you got to do. You got to take shots down the field. You can't throw 5 to 10 yard pass routes. You can't do that. And they put together some decent drives.
They did. Like I said, I mean, it was 14-10, you know, with a couple minutes left. You know, the Jets have all the momentum. The defense comes and they force a three and out. And you're thinking, hey, man, the Jets are going to get the ball back, you know, to start the second half. And they're getting a punt they're receiving a punt with like 2 minutes and 30 some seconds or so. You're saying, hey, if we can maybe get another field goal, cut this lead to one, and then come out at half feeling good about ourselves, this game can actually, you know, turn for the better. And there goes this guy, Khalif Raymond. You know, lost the ball in the sun, whatever you want to call it, tries to make a catch inside the 10, and the ball just pops off his chest. You know, the Raiders recover, and that was the end of the game. You know, here we are talking about the Jets are in a game, and I'm going to ask you this, Lloyd. The Jets had Jeremy Curley in the lineup today. He caught a few passes today. You know, he's probably their best punt returner, receiver, whatever you want to call it. Yeah, he calls a lot of fair catches, but he catches everything, man. And this is where you got to point out to the coaching, right? Khalif Raymond muffed two punts last week, and you put him out there again this week. Why?
Yeah, I mean, at some point, you have to hold players accountable, and these guys are professional. They're the best of the best. And if you're not going to do your job, then you need to be replaced. And I agree with you 100%. You know, if you want to have somebody back there who's really, you know, Curley is actually a good punt returner. And like you said, he may call quite a few fair catches. But one thing you definitely know you're going to get with him is he's going to catch the damn ball. You know, he's going to catch the ball. He's not going to muff punts. But I want to bring up, Matt Mike, that Jermaine Kearse, we talked about this whole, you know, Richardson, Jermaine Kearse thing, and I kind of was like, well, you know, they should have held on to Richardson until the end of the season. But if there's one bright spot for the New York Jets, Matt Mike, for 2 weeks in a row, it's been Jermaine Kearse. Yesterday, Jermaine Kearse had 4 catches for 64 yards and 2 touchdowns. And he's emerged as McCown's favorite target. So, you know, he's playing his butt off, man. So I got to give him kudos.
I'd like to trade from day one, and this is exactly what I was telling you. We can't look at the Jets for the here and now only. We got to look at the Jets going forward, and Jermaine Kearse is only 27 years old, and he might be solidifying himself as a number two receiver. You know, people want to knock him for not being a number one. They want to knock the Jets for not trading for a number one, but in the end of the day, you know like I know, you're only as good as your depth. And the Jets, what they did here is they got a guy who can be either a number two or a number three going forward, assuming he proves himself this year. And like you just said, if the first two weeks of this season tell you anything, you know, Jermaine Kearse is going to be a very reliable receiver going forward.
Yeah, and even with the offense playing better this week, I felt, than the first week, I still thought the offensive line didn't do that great of a job protecting McCown. McCown was able to move his feet, which brings me to the point of why I was saying that Josh McCown actually does something better than Eli Manning. And that brings me to the point that Josh McCown actually moves around in the pocket 10,000 times more better than Eli Manning. He actually scrambled and got some big third. I mean, it was like a 3rd and 15. He picked up a first down on a scramble. He picked up 5 yards here, 6 yards there. And to me, that is very important in this day and age because everybody's so fast on the defensive side of the ball that I think it's important to have a quarterback that can actually move around in the pocket. And the Giants offensive line, you know, not to jump from the Jets to the Giants right now, you know, the Giants offensive line is nowhere near is good where you can have a pocket passer just sit there and throw passes. But back to the Jets, Matt Mike, I actually thought the defense yet again was putrid. For the second straight week, Matt Mike, they gave up big plays like last year. These guys gave up rushing touchdowns to the Oakland Raiders of 43 and 52 yards, and that doomed the Jets. Derek Carr, man, was 23 for 28. For 230 yards, he threw for 3 touchdowns and had a player rating, Matt Mike, of 136.6. And he was not touched by a Jets defender all day, Matt Mike. He wasn't touched. And Michael Crabtree has 6 catches for 80 yards and 3 touchdowns, fantasy players. If you have Michael Crabtree, he got you some hella points. And they just scored the will against it, against that defense, Mad Mike. And at least I thought that that was going to be the Jets' strong point coming into the season. And thus far, for the first two games, that hasn't been the case.
No, it hasn't. But this brings me to coaching. So, you know, we look at the defense and we say, I'll start with the secondary. You said the secondary got picked on today. Derek Carr, you know, I don't even know what 136 player rating you said that he had yesterday.
Yeah, 136.6. Right? Okay.
So let's start with the secondary, and you look at those numbers, and you say, and we've had this conversation in the past. Todd Bowles was a safety. His specialty is supposed to be secondary. How come our secondary looks so much worse? Justin Burris. He looks terrible. I mean, he looked terrible. He got beat. He got turned around. He got a move put on him so bad that he ended up on his ass. I don't even want to blame the safeties. The linebacker play has been so bad that the safeties are actually stepping up and playing a hell of a lot better than anybody thought they were going to play this young in the season. The issue I have, and if you saw, especially on those long runs, the Jalen Richard run, you had DeMario Davis on one side, and he gets locked up by the guard, the blocker, and they're driving him back. And you see Darren Lee, he takes the wrong route. He once again gives up his gap. So he gives up the middle of the field. Here comes Richard running straight, you know, one cutback move, comes straight out the middle for the touchdown. That was one. Two, here's another question that I ask you. Is it the players or the coaching? DeMario Davis is the bigger player. And we're talking about the 260-pound middle linebacker. He has trouble getting off blocks because he's so small. It's short, height-wise. He doesn't have the reach that some of these bigger linemen have. So it's harder for him to fight off these blocks. He gets stuck in them, and he gets jammed in them, and it's over for him, right? Now, Darren Lee, we're talking about a guy. Darren Lee's 232 pounds. What middle linebacker in football is 232 pounds, Lloyd? You don't hear of that, right? So he's a middle linebacker because he's athletic. The 232-pound linebacker should be the guy in coverage, right? How come the Jets keep playing cover 56? How come you keep seeing DeMario Davis guarding running backs and tight ends instead of Darren Lee? That's coaching. That's bad management of use of your talent. That's on Todd Bowles. That's not on this defense. Darren Lee needs to move to the outside. If Jordan Jenkins is Jordan Jenkins is bigger than Darren Lee, and he's considered small for the linebacker position. So why is Darren Lee inside, man? It's not a great team. Look, we know that. It's a really bad team. But we have to look at, are they maximizing the little bit of talent they do have?
Yeah, and I mean, look, you are right. You know, for a middle linebacker to be at 232 pounds, he is light in the booty. You know what I'm saying? To be a middle linebacker. And you know, you're right. Maybe the decision might be made to put him to weak side linebacker and have him in coverage because he is athletic. But I will say the special teams was putrid, like you brought up with the muff punt. But the one bright spot on special teams was the Jets kicker. Contazzaro hit two field goals in the game, and he did a really good job, Matt Mike, of kickoffs as far as minimizing Cordell Patterson's, you know, ability to return kicks and to return punts. You know, but speaking of coaching, man, you know, you can really blast Todd Bowles for how the defense played, you know. But on you know, with that being said, you know, he can't make the tackles for them, Matt Mike. You know, and for the most part, this is more about players not executing than a failure in coaching, in my opinion. You know, the offensive coordinator, what's his name? Is it John Morton? You know, I give him a little bit of credit because he was, he was more aggressive this week, and I think he deserves credit for doing just that. Now, I think who did the Jets got? Miami this coming Sunday?
Yep. Yes.
Now,
they
I think
do.
Miami is a game that the Jets can win. These are the teams that I'm banking on the Jets beating. Like, I'm banking on the Jets splitting, you know, one of the two games with Miami, splitting one of the two games with Buffalo. You know, so I got the Jets maybe at about 5 or 6 wins this year. I don't know if they get the 5 or 6, but that's what I have them at. So I have them beating those teams, but it's gonna be a really tough fight for them against the really good teams in the football league, Mad Mike.
Yeah, I thought that they'd have a chance against Miami for a split. You know, probably a home and home. The Buffalo, the same thing. Jacksonville. You know, Cleveland, you want to think that they can beat these teams, and then maybe you catch a team sleeping later on in the season and you know, steal a fifth win somewhere. This team is not from what I've seen. You know, the one thing about the NFL, it's less right now, they're as fresh as it's going to be. You know, as the season wears on them, they're just going to get more and more hurt. It's going to be a totally different team. You know, you're gonna have injuries, so this is their best time to steal wins, and they're not playing like a team that thinks they can win. And I maybe it's just me looking from the outside in. You know, you never know what they're saying in that locker room, if they really do believe in themselves. But you know, maybe 3 wins. And just real quick, that's why I heard Josh McCown talking in his post game, saying we're still learning each other, we're still growing, we're still getting better, or we're still working on getting better. It sounds good. The problem is Josh McCown is not here for the future. He's not here for the long run, and he shouldn't be the one growing with this offense. It should either be Hackenberg or Petty, and really it shouldn't be Hackenberg at all. It should be just Petty. But that's all I have left to say about these guys.
Well, I mean, not to add insult to injury, but the Jets have allowed 66 points in 2 games, and that is by far the most in the NFL, Mad Mike.
Well, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, when you hear the coach come out and say, you know, a lot of missed assignments, that's the coach saying, hey, it's not me, and it's him blaming his players. And then, you know, the players obviously are going to say, it's on us. You know, we made the mistakes. We missed the tackles. We missed our assignments. We did that. Why? Because if they oppose their coach, where do you find yourself in this league? On the bench. And if you're on the bench, you're not playing for a new contract. And in the league, go ahead.
No, Gad, I didn't want to cut you off. I'm sorry.
No. I was just saying that, you know, in a league where your money's not guaranteed, it's best to keep your mouth shut and do what the coach says and play as hard as you can, because your livelihood is on the videotape.
Right. I mean, and to close out the little spot on the Jets, if we thought that the crowd at the L.A. Coliseum was laughable today, oh, boy, wait till you see what MetLife is going to look like when the Jets play Miami. So, you know, these guys, again, I'm gonna go out on a limb, Mad Mike. I'm gonna go out on a limb, and I'm gonna say that the Jets are gonna get their first win of the season against the Miami Dolphins this coming Sunday.
And I'm gonna go out on a limb and say Jay Ajayi is gonna run for 272 yards.
Now, who's a fan, man? Is it me or is it you? I'm gonna predict that they're gonna get their first dub this Sunday. Let's go, Jets. Jets. Jets, 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 Jets.
Okay.
All right. With that being said, man, we're going to move on to the New York Football Giants. And there were reports, Mad Mike, there were reports that Odell Beckham Jr. was out eating at a restaurant, and I believe he bumped into... it wasn't T.I., it was somebody else. I can't think of who it was. But he was at a restaurant and bumped into somebody else. And supposedly, the other person that he bumped into, them dudes got up and had a dance-off. So this dude was dancing in a restaurant before the game in Dallas, but he couldn't play in the game in Dallas. So a lot of people are scrutinizing him, saying, well, if you can't play, how in the hell are you able to pull off some dance moves? You know, so what do you think about that, man, Mike?
I think this is all contract related. I think that he came out early last week after the Dallas game and, you know, made it a point to say that his ankle injury is a 6 to 8 week injury and he's only about 3 weeks in. I think this is just him playing, you know, the contract game, playing the waiting game, but doing it in a way where people won't turn on him, won't see what he's doing, and won't question his motives. That's what I think. I think that the guy, you know, maybe he's not 100%, maybe he's 80%, and I think it's easy for the Giants to kind of, you know, I don't want to say defend him, but kind of, you know, paint it in a picture where they can say, well, you know, we don't want him on the field until he's 100% because we don't want this to linger. But honestly, you know, like I know, in the NFL, you can't afford to give away games, whether it's late in the season, early in the season. Every win matters. Every game matters. Every loss matters. And if he's at 80%, and 80% of Odell is better than 80% of the league, he needs to be on the field.
Yeah, well, there were reports that, you know, he might play this Sunday. He's saying that his ankle is getting better and better. But we'll see. But I tell you what, man, the Giants have Detroit later this evening. And Detroit, by far, is no pushover. And get this, man, Mike, the Giants' best corner, Janoris Jenkins, a.k.a. Jackrabbit, he's been listed as questionable. You know, when he left the game this past Sunday against the Cowboys, he had a wrap on his right hand, you know, as he did, and he did away with all the extra protection after the game. But, you know, he cropped up on the injury report with the hand and ankle issues, but he did practice for most of the week. You know, so on, you know, he was downgraded to questionable yesterday. You know, he's a question mark for Monday. They definitely need him. Look, he's the Giants' top cornerback. And we both can agree that Janoris Jenkins can easily take away any opponent's top receiver. You know, he covered Dez Bryant as a season opener. And, you know, with 9 targets, there were Dez Bryant had 2 catches for 43 yards. Okay? Now, the Lions' top receiver is Golden Tate, who usually lines up in a slot. And if he lines up in a slot, that means that Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie is going to have to draw that assignment. And I think Golden Tate, again, he's a little bit too fast in that slot for Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie. But, you know, and then if Jenkins plays, he would have to cover Marvin Jones, you know, who's their top outside threat. You know, but there's reports that if he doesn't play, you know, the Giants cornerback, Michael Hunter, and they traded for Ross Cockrell on next in line. Hunter only played 3 defensive snaps in the first game. So that's nothing to be getting up in arms about or excited about. You know, Cockrell was acquired in a trade from the Steelers, and he didn't play any defensive snaps. So, you know, I was getting on B.J. Goodson, man, Mike. You know, I've been tough on him. Now, I have to give him a little bit of props because in his first start, B.J. Goodson, he had 18 tackles. He had 18 tackles, and 14 of them were solo.
But isn't B.J. Goodson questionable for tonight's game?
Listen,
I'm just saying, isn't he questionable for tonight's game?
Yeah,
and before I let you jump on that, but if Janoris Jenkins is not going to play, then I'd be very worried because Matt Stafford, unlike Eli, and this isn't a knock, you know, but Matt Stafford spreads the ball equally. He doesn't fix on one receiver. He doesn't rely on just one guy. If that one guy, like last week, Odell not being available, and then the passing game went out the window. You know, for Matt Stafford, he's going to use 6 guys, 5 guys. If he can throw to 9 different guys, he's going to throw to 9 different guys. So if Jenkins can't go, it changes the whole complexion, because you know the one thing that Stafford is going to do is he's going to find whoever that sub is. And he's got, it doesn't matter if it's, you know, Jones, it doesn't matter if it's Tate, Ebron, it doesn't matter if it's Galladay, he's going to find the open guy. And that's going to be a hard hole for the Giants to plug on defense. Now, I'll let you jump on the B.J. Goodson situation.
No, well, I'm telling you right now, if the Giants don't put any pressure on Matthew Stafford, meaning if they don't knock him down or sack him, they're not winning this game. They don't stand a chance to win this damn game tonight if they don't put any pressure on Matthew Stafford. I'm telling you that right now.
You're right. But here's the other catch. Matt Stafford is kind of like McCown. Like, it's the same comment you just made, you know, when we're talking about the Jets game. Matt Stafford can move around that pocket. Matt Stafford can manipulate the pocket. Matt Stafford can slide in and out. And you know, even if you do get pressure, he can give himself enough room where he doesn't necessarily feel it completely to keep his passing lanes open. That's the difference. I do know that the Lions have a questionable offensive line or a line that's coming together. They're building chemistry on the line. But he's able to use his space, whatever little or a lot that he has at that, you know, very given play. The one situation that I think hurts the Giants tonight, and I don't think the Giants are going to win. I don't think they're going to win, but for this reason, the one good thing that they do is they stop the run. I know they didn't stop the run against the Cowboys, but they, for the most part, stopped the run. Detroit doesn't run the ball well to begin with. So it's not like stopping a run is going to take Detroit out of what they want to do. I think Detroit, you know what I'm saying? Detroit doesn't run, and the Giants stop the run. So it's not like they're taking something away from Detroit that's going to change the game plan tonight.
Well, Ezekiel Elliott, I mean, the Giants defense actually did a good job against the run against Dallas. He only had 103 yards, and that 103 yards, that was a hard fought. He earned that. He earned.
No, you're right.
Whatever money he's getting, he earned that money in week one against the Giants.
But 100-yard rusher is a scarlet letter for a defense, man.
Yeah, it is. It is. But, you know, you're talking about a 1,600-plus, you know, yard running back. So if you hold somebody of that caliber to 85 yards, 90, and, you know, 101, 102, sometimes that could be deemed as a success more than a failure. Now, you are right. Anytime a defense gives up 100 yards to a running back, nobody wants to do that. You know, but I thought the Giants did a pretty good job of keeping him in check. And this team is banged up, man. You know, also Bobby Hart, you know, his ankle is messed up. And, you know, he can't play. If he can't play, Justin Pugh is going to move from left guard to right tackle to fill Bobby.
Huh? That's a problem.
Yeah, but, you know, then they have Brett Jones coming off the bench, and he's going to move in the left guard. Where the hell is DJ Fluker? I heard DJ Fluker wasn't even active last week, man, Mike.
I don't know, man. I'm kind of, you know, hearing that he can't crack one of the worst offensive lines in football, it makes me happy that the Jets weren't able to sign him. And I was hoping that the Jets ended up with him. That would have been a real Jetsy thing to have done, right? Like, he must really be bad. But at the same time, I want to highlight this about DJ Fluker. He came from a power offense in college. You know what I'm saying? Alabama, that's just a powerhouse. We're going to stuff it down your face. The Giants, that's not what they do anymore. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's not what Ben McAdoo is looking for. He needs athletic linemen to run this offense. It's just what it is. He needs guys that are going to be able to really get out there, move quick. It's kind of like Chip Kelly without saying it's Chip Kelly. You know what I'm saying? Like, anything that Chip Kelly does in the NFL is met with such disdain. But if you look around the league, how many people are doing it? It's the hypocrisy of the league, right? So here's why Justin Pugh moving to right tackle scares me. When Justin Pugh got drafted, the knock on him was his arms were too short to play tackle in the NFL. He was eventually going to move from right tackle inside to guard. So moving him back out to tackle at any point, just, it's like waving a white flag. It's like saying, hey, I got one of the worst left tackles in football already. Now I'm going to get a guy who, because of his arms, can't create space and lock up on the outside. I mean, I'd be scared to death if I'm Eli Manning, because now, you know, now not only are you got to worry about the weak side, but now you got to worry about the strong side. And if he can see the rush coming, he's going to be even more scared.
What? Now get this: the Lions. You was talking about the Lions' poor run. They only have 51 yards on 22 carries from their running backs last week, and they only had gains of 10 plus yards. Their only gains of 10 plus yards last week, Matt Mike, came on scrambles by Dan Stafford and the punter. So they didn't have a run. Their running back didn't have a 10 plus yard game. None of their running backs had a 10 plus yard game. And last week's game.
But that's what I'm telling you. One thing the Giants do well is really going to be, it's not going to matter tomorrow. The Giants stop the run. That's one thing that they're really good on is run defense. And Detroit doesn't even try to run the ball. So it's a wash there. By the way, real quick, I want to tell you a funny story. I'm listening to the radio, Anita Marks, Chris Canty and Bart Scott, right? They're talking about John Jerry, and Bart Scott's telling a story about how when John Jerry was in Miami, he said that the guys on the sidelines would play rock paper scissors to see who would be able to who would get in on the next series, because everybody thought he was so bad they just wanted to go against him because they knew that they were going to be able to pad their stats.
Well, it's a shame that DJ Fluka is not there. And if DJ Fluka is not there because he can't grasp the concept or crack the starting rotation, then the Giants, they're really in trouble, man. They need to do something. They need to trade for somebody. They need to scout a free agent, wire an offensive lineman to see who's there. But I don't think they're going to survive with this offensive line the entire season.
Who's your center?
Reston Richburg.
Can Richburg play any other position on the line?
I'm sure he can, but you know, supposedly what's going to happen is they're going to put Brent Jones at Justin Pugh's spot if Justin Pugh has to play tackle. So you know that ain't they cut Bismarck, the lineman they drafted from Pittsburgh. They cut him. I don't know what the hell is going on with DJ Fluker, but obviously he's not in the conversation because he's not even being mentioned. You know, so the Giants offensive line is a mess, man. Next thing I know, they'll probably be bringing back, what's the damn guy that played left tackle before Flowers got here? With the braids and he wore glasses. I forgot his name, but he got hurt and they brought him back and then they cut him again. The Giants are going to start scrounging from the bottom of the barrel for offensive linemen. You know, and to go back to the Giants' defense, which you was talking about, which do really, you know, they do really well against the run. There's only been the Giants have only allowed two backs, Matt Mike, to top 100 yards against them since the start of last season, and that's Le'Veon Bell and Ezekiel Elliott. So you know, you're right. Those boys, you know, they don't. You hit if you get 100 yards, that's like hitting a lottery.
Yeah. But that's why I'm saying that, I think that's why I'm saying that the Jackrabbit injury can be catastrophic for tonight's game, because you know that Detroit is not even going to try to run the ball. If anything, they'll give them a couple looks just to keep, you know, the defense honest, but they're not coming in and trying to have success tonight running the ball. They're going to come in there and they're going to spread the ball around. And if Jackrabbit is hurt, or he's on limited snap count, then I think that you lose the game.
We'll see what happens, but we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to go around. We're going to do the round table around the NFL. We're going to talk about Carmelo Anthony being ranked 64th best player in the NBA by ESPN. We're going to talk about the Triple G and Canelo Alvarez fight. And yes, we're going to take some questions from you, the listeners, at the end of the show. But we'll be right back with more of the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show.
What's up, everybody? My name is A.O. Aaron Omar Baker from the PodCloud Network. I'm also the producer for this show, the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Show. Check it out. I want to say thank you to everybody. The numbers are continuing to go up. You guys are downloading, sharing, talking about the show. Thank you very, very much. All we're going to do is continue to grow and get better. Also, check out PodCloudNetwork.com. In addition to the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Show, there's the A.O. Show. I have interviews. I have brand new music. Never know what's going to happen next. It's at PodCloudNetwork.com. Check it out. Let's get back to the show.
Welcome back to the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. We're going to run through the NFL scores from week two, Mad Mike. And there were some good games. So the Houston Texans beat the Cincinnati Bengals 13-9 as Deshaun Watson played a really good game and he led the Texans to a win. The Buffalo Bills lost to the Carolina Panthers 9-3. As I would expect Carolina to put up more than 9 points with their high-powered offense against the Buffalo Bills defense. But that was a low-scoring affair. The Panthers pulled that out 9-3. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers defeated the Chicago Bears 29-7. The Pittsburgh Steelers are rolling 2 weeks in a row, as they beat the Minnesota Vikings 26-9. The Arizona Cardinals defeated the Colts 16-13, as the Colts actually gave Arizona a run for their money, you know, after being blown out week one. The Patriots beat the Saints 36-20 as Tom Brady threw for over 300 yards and so many. He threw for like 3 touchdowns or whatever, but he had another. If you have Tom Brady on your fantasy team, he racked up some points for you. And the Saints defense, they're bad and they're worse. And Peterson, according to reports, he wants out of town, as you saw him going at his coach saying, "I need more than 9 touches in a game." The Baltimore Ravens defeated the Cleveland Browns 24-10. The Kansas City Chiefs defeated the Eagles 27-20. And I'll tell you this much, Mad Mike, the Eagles actually look pretty good. And the Giants are going to have a run for their money when they face the Eagles, when they meet them during the season. The Tennessee Titans defeated the Jacksonville Jaguars 37-16. Your beloved Jets took an L as they lost to the Oakland Raiders 45-20. The Chargers lost to the Dolphins, who the Jets faced this week, 19-17. And Mad Mike, the Denver Broncos put a butt whooping on the Dallas Cowboys, beating them 42-17. The Seattle Seahawks defeated the San Francisco 49ers 12-9. As you would expect, Seattle, again, with their offense, to put up more than 12 points. You know, the 49ers did a good job. You know, they gave them all that they can give them. The Washington Redskins defeated the Rams 27-20. So right now, my beloved New York Giants are sitting in last place in the NFC East. The Atlanta Falcons defeated the Green Bay Packers 34-29. And then we have the Giants facing the Lions later on this evening. So, you know, that's the rundown of week two, Mad Mike. Before we move on to this Carmelo Anthony thing, wasn't there something that you wanted to bring up to the listeners about what happened with the NFL? It was some breaking news or something like that?
Oh, yeah, man. About 9 o'clock Sunday night, there was some news that broke that out in Cincinnati, the players want the Bengals organization to sign Mr. Colin Kaepernick. And Mr. Colin Kaepernick actually did an interview. It was his first interview in some time. And he confirmed that, yes, he still wants to be a quarterback and he's ready to go right now. He's in shape and ready to play. So I thought that those two stories coming out simultaneously kind of puts pressure on the Bengals organization. Not only that, but didn't Tom Brady come out and supported Colin Kaepernick yesterday? Called him a great quarterback, called him qualified, called him accomplished, said that he's already achieved a lot more than you know, some other quarterbacks in the league currently. I mean, you know, not for nothing, real quick, You see what's going on in Indianapolis. Jacoby Brissett looked terrible. You know, they've already made a quarterback change, you know, after week one. So it's the pressure's mounting. That's all I'm going to say on the subject.
Well, if Cincinnati is looking to sign, you said Cincinnati, right?
Correct. I didn't say they're looking. I'm saying the players want him.
Okay, now if the players want him, what is that saying about the starting quarterback they have now, Andy Dalton? Are the players saying that, you know, Colin Kaepernick is better than Andy Dalton and they're giving up on him? You know, if you're Andy Dalton, do you take some kind of offense from your teammates wanting them to sign Colin Kaepernick? You know, this can cause so many different types of issues, Mad Mike.
Yeah, but it's not just Colin Kaepernick. I mean, Andy Dalton's been on a chopping block for a little while now. He's got a lot of players that have turned on him, you know, not just this year, but, you know, towards the end of last year. Talking about a guy there 7 years already, has never won a playoff game, gets a lot of the credit, you know, and not for nothing, if Cincinnati truly believed in Andy Dalton, his new contract that he signed last year wouldn't have an opt-out clause after year two. So they can actually sign Colin Kaepernick and say, who cares about Andy Dalton's feelings, because they can opt out of that contract at the end of this season.
Well, we'll see what happens, and, you know, we both agree that there's no reason why Colin Kaepernick shouldn't be in the NFL at this particular point, looking at, you know, seeing what we're seeing from some of these NFL quarterbacks at the moment, but hopefully he'll get a shot because, you know, I feel that he still can be a productive quarterback in NFL, and I'm sure you feel the same way. But moving on to this ESPN NBA player ranking, these guys had Carmelo Anthony, currently of the New York Knicks, ranked 64th on their player rankings list. 64th. Now, you have your issues with Melo, and I have my issues with Melo. But I hope we both can agree, Mad Mike, we both can agree that Melo is not the 64th best player in the NBA, that he's way higher than 60. I mean, way lower than 64. 64 is an injustice to Carmelo Anthony. They have Lonzo Ball, Mad Mike. Lonzo Ball, who's never played a damn second in the NBA. They have him ranked higher than Carmelo Anthony. They have him ranked. Now, let me just read off some of the names, Mad Mike, that they have ranked higher than Carmelo Anthony. Lonzo Ball, Eric Gordon, Avery Bradley, Devin Booker, Danny Green, Harrison Barnes, Andrew Wiggins, Malcolm Brogdon. Who the hell is Malcolm Brogdon? They have him ranked higher than Carmelo Anthony. Robert Covington. Melo kills Robert Covington when they play against each other. He's ranked higher than him. Danilo Gallinari is ranked higher than him. Andre Drummond. Drew Holiday, Brooke Lopez. Look, I'm so disgusted with this list. I'm going to take a break. I just want you to interject and give your opinion on this.
My opinion is they did it for the hits. You know, I think they did it because, you know, they want the shock value, right? People, if I put them 20 or you know, if I put everything in the right order it belongs, nobody's going to care about my list. Now, I'll tell you this, while there are definitely some guys on there that don't belong ahead of him, I'm not going to go and say that Melo's in the top 20. I don't believe that for one second.
Well,
and I don't care
say,
what he
I
said.
I wouldn't say Melo's in the top 20 neither, because he doesn't play defense. So I wouldn't give him the top.
No. And that's exactly where I was going with it. You see, when someone like Stephen A. Smith defends him in this situation, they keep talking about his scoring prowess. And I'm saying this is not a list of the top scorers in the league. This is a list of the top players. So they're taking everything into account, from rebounds, assists, not how good you are at it. It's what the numbers say. And the numbers speak to your willingness to do something. Melo's not willing to pass the ball. So they're grading him on that. Now, here's a problem I have more than the list itself. The problem I have is, why does this bother him? this is not supposed to bother him. It's supposed to bother us. You know what I'm saying? We're supposed to put up the fight for him. He's supposed to keep his mouth shut, put his head down, put his hoodie on, and go ball out. That's his job. Let us fight for you. You know what I'm saying? Let us be disgusted for you. The fact that you're still paying attention to this, the fact that you're still complaining about this, tells me you haven't learned a goddamn thing from last season when you complained about being ranked 15th. All you care about, and maybe I'm wrong, but all I hear from him is me. Why me? I'm better than this. I'm better. Stop. Shut up and play ball. Because at the end of the day, the one thing that you can't say is my teams are better. You and your teams go nowhere. So in the end of the day, how about you say, hey, my team this year was top 15 or my team was top. Who cares about your ranking? For once, why don't you, let's just talk about the team.
Well, there's been reports of a superhero in Gotham City, and that superhero goes by the name of the Hooded Melo. Because he has all this video footage of him balling out while he's working out during the off season, and look, from the footage that I've seen, Mad Mike, I'm really, really impressed by what I've seen. But every damn video clip that I see him balling out in, this dude is wearing a hoodie. So if that's what it takes to get Melo to ball out, I literally think the Knicks need to sew a damn hood to the back of his jersey so he can rock out the way he's doing during this offseason thing. And I also want to add that the Knicks signed Jarrett Jack. I like that pickup. It doesn't make sense to me because they just signed Ramon Sessions. So the Knicks got like 63 point guards on their roster, which makes no sense to me. And of course, I'm exaggerating with the 63. But, you know, you got Jarrett Jack, you got Frank Ntilikina, you got Ramon Sessions, you got Ron Baker, you got Chase Randle, you got Courtney Lee, and you got Tim Hardaway Jr. Mad Mike, it's only 15 damn spots on the roster, and 7 of them are guards. 7!
I'm a little speechless there. I will say this. When you have 7 point guards on a... I'm sorry, I'm joking. When you have, I guess, 4 point guards on the roster, because I'm going to count Baker as a point guard for this argument, I don't think they're comfortable in any of them. I think that if they had the perfect scenario, Frank Ntilikina would come out and he'd ball out from game one. But I don't think they're comfortable with anybody that they have. And I think the reason why is because none of these guys that they signed, Lloyd, are true facilitators. We don't know what Frank Ntilikina is, right? And I'm not knocking the player. The player can turn out to be a star. What I'm saying is we haven't seen him yet. We don't know if he's going to be more shooter, more facilitator, more slasher. We don't know yet. So I don't want to count him. But we know Jarrett Jack is not a true facilitator. We know Ramon Sessions isn't a true facilitator. And, you know, not for nothing, I don't know what Ron Baker is a true anything. I don't think he's consistent enough on his shot. I don't think he's consistent enough getting to the hoop. Once again, he's on the roster for his defense. Whatever we think of that is whatever. And anyway, what I'm saying is when you have 4 point guards, you have none. It's like having 3 quarterbacks in football. When you have 3 quarterbacks that can start, you have no starters. So, you know, we'll see where this goes.
Well, I tell you, once you said Ron Baker's name, man, I got a damn headache. When I said Ron Baker's name, I got a headache. But, you know, Melo tweeted out to ESPN again. I agree with you. Like, why are you worried about what somebody says about you? You know, at this point, you've done, you know, you're going to go down as one of the better players to play in the NBA. So why should anything that anybody says to, you know, say to you at this point in your career, you know, get under your skin? But Melo, you know, his tweet to ESPN was can't make sense out of nonsense. A certain darkness is needed to see stars at ESPN. Don't be so blatant with the disrespect. That was Melo's tweet to ESPN. So hopefully this lights a fire under his butt. It looks like he's going to be with the Knicks this season until Knicks find a way to get rid of him and a deal that makes sense to them. So let's see what happens. Now everybody's saying that the best thing for him to do is get out of here. It's an ugly situation, but I think, you know, they're both stuck with each other for now. But there was a fight, Mad Mike, over the weekend, and it wasn't Mayweather against Conor McGregor. It was the other big fight of the year, Triple G against Canelo Alvarez. And I know that you watched that fight from start to finish. So I just want you to break down that fight to the listeners for us.
All right, yeah, I definitely did watch this fight. And it was a great fight, man. It was a great fight. Canelo came out like I thought he would. He came out and he used his speed, his movement in the early rounds to, I'm not going to say confuse Golovkin, but he made Golovkin look slow. You kind of felt like you were watching a slow fighter. But here's what I always thought Golovkin was going to do. Golovkin, and I've told you this, we've had this conversation. I thought Golovkin was going to use his jab. You know, I thought he was going to use it, range finder. I thought he was going to use it to throw off this Canelo's timing, which he did. And I thought he was going to use it to set up, you know, everything else that he does. He kept himself paced. He kept a measured pace in the beginning, which served him well, because as Canelo got tired and started to slow down, you know, he was slowing down to Golovkin's speed. So, I thought that once again, it was, you know, Golovkin stalked his prey the whole night. He was coming forward. And Canelo backed up the entire fight, man. He backed up. He laid on the ropes. He at times stopped throwing. And once again, it was a close fight, depending on how you gave the rounds. I scored the fight 8-4 in favor of Golovkin. But if I gave the first round and I gave the 12th round to Golovkin, if you found one of those rounds for Canelo, I can see you having it a little closer. But I'm going to tell you, I'm going to read you these punch stats, man. It's going to blow your mind. Golovkin landed 218 punches to Canelo's 169 punches. He outlanded him in the jabs area. Golovkin landed 108 jabs. Canelo only landed 55 jabs the entire fight. The power punches were pretty much even. Golovkin landed 110 power punches, and Canelo landed 114 power punches. So Golovkin, I'm giving you the numbers right here. He was clearly the busier fighter for the entire night. He outthrew him. He outlanded him. So, you know, you got guys like Bernard Hopkins. By the way, before I even get to Bernard Hopkins, listen, we had a draw. There was no winner here. One judge had it 115-113 for Golovkin. One judge had it 114-114, a tie. And Adelaide Bird had it 118-110 to Canelo Alvarez. So Canelo got outlanded by almost, you know, what was it, 50 punches. He was outlanded by 49, to be exact. Power punches were even, and she somehow gave him 10 rounds in the fight, it causing the controversy. There was not, listen, Canelo came in for a pro crowd. He came into a pro crowd. Everybody was cheering him. This is the hometown guy. This is the golden boy. And when they announced those cards during his interview, he got booed out of the ring. He's over here talking about he easily won 7 or 8 rounds. Oscar De La Hoya is saying he won 7 or 8 rounds. And it brings me to Bernard Hopkins, who said that he won 7 rounds. And he said, and I quote Bernard Hopkins, "You have a guy with a rep of being a monster and you survive that, you're going to get some close rounds." I'm sorry, Lloyd. When you get in a fight, do you win because you survived?
No, you don't.
Right.
So, at least not where I come from, you don't.
Yeah. So what Bernard is saying, just by surviving the onslaught, he's the winner of the fight. Now, here's another thing that I want to tell you. Canelo was hit with the jab like it was, you know, he was a ping pong ball. And if you think about it, you know, Golovkin is short for a middleweight, or Canelo's short for a middleweight. So he's always going to have a shorter reach. Do you think Danny Jacobs watched that fight and thought to himself, "Man, I can't beat this guy"? Danny Jacobs is going to jab him to death. You know, this fight, even though Canelo got the draw, which saves him, you know, from a second loss on his record, you know, what it did to me is it didn't show me that Triple G's done. It showed others that, you know, there's a different blueprint to beat Canelo. So, I'm so disgusted with the fight. I really am. With the scorecards, I don't understand how 118-110. I mean, 118-110. That means 10 rounds. 10 rounds.
Well, you want to know what my thought on that, Mad Mike, is? I think that boxing is so damn corrupt and crooked, and I could be wrong, but my opinion is they either did that A, to set up a Canelo Alvarez Triple G 2 fight, you know, or they did it to salvage, you know, Canelo's career, because he, like you said, he is younger than Triple G. But either way, you know, the fighting, you know, I always felt that, you know, fighting is corrupt. Like, the boxing industry is corrupt, man. And when you see fights like this, you know, it proves my theory even more when I see judges judge that way. So,
yeah. And Lloyd, I'm going to give you one more thing to think about. Canelo, Adelaide Bird gave Canelo 10 out of 12 rounds. She scored 10 out of 12 rounds for Canelo. In 10 out of the 12 rounds, Golovkin outlanded Canelo. So you were actually giving Canelo rounds where Golovkin was hitting him with more punches. And I'm, once again, I gave you the power numbers. You know, in some fights, which like the Cotto Canelo fight, they said the power punches is what won the fight for Canelo, right? So I told you the power punches were even. It was 110 to 114. So where do you find 10 rounds to give them? And with that, like, listen, if listeners, if you think I'm overselling this or overstating this, go look up Teddy Atlas on YouTube and watch his reaction. I thought Teddy was going to have a heart attack.
Well, I say, heck, do it again. Do it again. A draw is not, you know, obviously, who wants a draw? Who wants a tie? Nobody wants that. So I say, let him lace up the gloves and do it one more time, and hopefully there'll be a victor. But
see, that's the thing, Lloyd. I wouldn't, if I'm Golovkin, I wouldn't do it again. I wouldn't do it again. I mean, you're telling me that anything closer than you know, if Golovkin is anything less than what he was last night, which was short of amazing, he's gonna lose. Why would I put myself in that ring? I know I beat you already. I'm not gonna give you the rematch.
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll see what happens, but oh boy, boxing, I tell you. But yes. As promised, Mad Mike, you know, we haven't been taking questions from the listeners. So this brings us to the point of the show where we're going to field some questions from some of our listeners, and we're going to answer them. So we have the first question coming from Raymond 2631 from Cleveland, Ohio. And his question to us is, how do we feel about Marshawn Lynch dancing on the sidelines during the Jets-Raiders game? He wants to know if we feel that was being disrespectful to the New York Jets. I'll let you go first on that, Mad Mike.
No, I didn't think it was disrespectful. You know, one, I hate it because I'm a Jet fan, but you have to think about at what point in the game, you know, that was on a 52-yard touchdown run for Jalen Richard. I mean, yeah, no, you know what? Stop him. That's it. You know, you see a 52-yard run, let him dance all he wants. He was at home. He's from Oakland. Let him celebrate.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't have a problem with it as you know, also, I didn't think it was tasteless. It was somebody that was on the sideline that was enjoying his team's victory. And in the midst of enjoying the team's victory, you know, he was celebrating it by dancing. It's no different than what any other player does. If Odell Beckham Jr. comes off on a sideline and he's dancing, it makes no difference. It was just that the Jets was getting their butts kicked by Oakland, and they're just looking for a reason to, you know, to diminish the fact that they just got outplayed in that football game. So thanks for the question. The next question comes from The Rebound. And The Rebound wants to know, Stephon Marbury has announced that he's going to attempt to make a comeback into the NBA at the age of 40, and the Rebound wants to know, do we feel that Marbury has a chance of making it into the NBA? And I'll start off first, Mad Mike. I mean, Marbury, when Marbury played in the league, I felt that Marbury was ahead of his time. You know, Marbury was the Derrick Rose before the Derrick Rose was the Derrick Rose. You know, and now Marbury went over to China after having problems and kind of being exiled from the NBA, you know, and eating the Vaseline out of the jar and all that other kind of stuff. He's gone over to China and resurrected his career to the point where they have a statue of him out in China. Now, my thing is, you're 40 years old. I don't think that as a 40-year-old point guard that you're going to be able to come back into the NBA. Now, he may get a shot. I think that a team may give him a shot, but I don't think he's going to catch on somewhere because there's so many guards that are younger than him, Mad Mike, that are not into the league. So I think Marbury should just stay over in China and continue the legacy he has over here, over there, and finish his career there.
I agree. I'll answer the question by asking a question. If it's Stephon Marbury and your career in the NBA ended unceremoniously, and you end up becoming a cult hero, a superstar, a rock star in China, why would you even want to come back here? You know what? Just have it. He's a perfect tale of two careers, and, you know, just be satisfied with that. But I get it. You know what I'm saying? Like, he feels like his NBA career ended, you know, prematurely, and he wants to, you know, give it one more go, but I would leave it alone. I mean, could you imagine him trying to defend John Wall at age 40? You know, just move on. Be happy with everything you've accomplished.
Yeah. So next question comes from the Jack in the Box, 1241 from San Diego, and he wants to know our thoughts on Carmelo Anthony being ranked as the 64th best player by ESPN, as we touched on that. So I'm just going to keep it real simple. I think that he shouldn't be 64. I think I would give him between that 25 and 35 player ranking number, to be honest with you, Mad Mike.
Yeah, I'll give him between 25 and 35, and I'll tell Melo, stop worrying about what everybody else thinks of you and go earn it on the court.
Now, the next question comes from Jill, and Jill is from Buffalo, and Jill wants to ask us, how do we feel about Odell Beckham Jr. having a dance contest before the Dallas Cowboys game? Again, this is something else that we touched on the show, so I'll start off real quick. I'm not going to spend too much time on this, but, you know, if you're injured and you can't perform for your team to help your team win, there's no reason why you should be doing anything else other than getting your butt ready to play on that football field Sunday, Monday, Thursday, whatever day you got the game on. Get yourself ready to play ball and help your team win and not dance like you're on Dancing with the Damn Stars.
Hey, Jill from Buffalo, I'm not going to answer your question because LeSean McCoy torched my team last week.
Oh boy, I tell you, man. Oh, listen, sports is amazing. Sports is truly amazing. And the last question comes from Johnny 2347. He wants to know, what do we think is the next step for Canelo Alvarez and Triple G as far as their opponents? Now, I'm not going to touch on this. I'll leave this up to you to answer because, obviously, you know, you're a bit more well-versed in this than I am when it comes to these, you know, the boxes that are, you know, I'm the Mike Tyson, you know, when Mike Tyson fought, that's when I was heavy in the boxing. I kind of fell off, so I'll let you tackle this one, Mad Mike.
All right, so Oscar De La Hoya has already said and Bernard Hopkins has already said that whatever rematch takes place is going to take place that weekend for Cinco de Mayo. So we're going to wait until May for a rematch. Now, I don't know what Canelo's plans are, but we do know that Triple G likes to fight more frequently. So I'm going to go out on a limb and say that if Canelo's not going to take an immediate rematch, that Triple G is going to, you know, opt to fight Miguel Cotto in December at Madison Square Garden. Triple G has a history at the Garden. Miguel Cotto was a rock star at the Garden, and he was looking forward to facing the winner of this fight. So I'm going to say if Oscar's not looking to do an immediate rematch, which Tom Leffler, you know, Golovkin's promoter, already suggested that, hey, if this isn't going to happen right away, then maybe they look somewhere else. I'm going to go out and say Cotto Golovkin, and then I don't know what Canelo's going to do. Oscar was looking to put David Lemieux in the ring with Miguel Cotto. So I'm going to say that if Cotto gets his way and gets Golovkin, and that's his, you know, his retirement fight, you might see Lemieux versus Canelo. Now, I'll say this, and I may, you know, this will be the last thing I say on the subject. I don't know. I'm being optimistic that we'd get two great fights leading up to a rematch. As a promoter, I don't think you would do either one because you don't want your guys in tough fights before such a big rematch.
Yeah, we'll see what happens, but that's going to bring us to a conclusion of this week's show. Listeners, we want to thank you so much for sending your questions to us. And, you know, we're going to do our best to start airing more and more questions week in and week out. So we're going to try to keep that promise to you guys. So continue to send us questions, and me and the Mad Mike are going to continue to give you our opinions on those questions that you send. So guys, I want to thank our producer, A.O. Baker, for doing what he does to make this show what it is. I want to thank the Mad Mike for always calling in from wherever the hell he is, week in and week out. But most importantly, I want to thank you, the listeners, for making us who we are. So guys, please have a safe and blessed week, and we will see you a week from today. Ayo! Let's roll up out of here.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that'll bring us to the conclusion of today's show. Shouts to Lloyd, shouts to Mad Mike. Phenomenal job, as always, as I've come to expect from the two of y'all. So check, I definitely agree Triple G beat Canelo. I saw the fight. He definitely beat Canelo Alvarez. I look at it like this. If they both have a similar percentage of shots landed, but somebody throws the volume that Triple G threw, that's the win. He was the one pushing the pace, and he was the one that's more aggressive. I don't understand it, but the promoters are obviously trying to make more money on a part two. So we'll see what happens with that. We'll see if my Giants can pick up the win against the Detroit Lions tonight. But we'll see y'all next week. LloydATThompson.com as well as PodCloudNetwork.com. Brand new shows every Monday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Peace.